The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now I'm joined by Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. We have so many stories to talk about today, and we'll talk about each of them briefly. Yeah. You wanted to come in to talk about long COVID because it hasn't gone away, you know.
That's the big thing in some ways, Pat. Yeah, in fact, I've had a couple of people email me recently with long COVID saying, why aren't we hearing more about it? Because it seems to have been forgotten. And it's very serious, remember. 84,000 people in Ireland are still very debilitated by this. They reckon there's 400 million people worldwide have long COVID. And it means you can't work. Severe fatigue, aches and pains persisting for years.
And brain fog.
And one woman, Colita, emailed me to say she got it very early on and it hasn't gone away for all those years. You know, so it's very much still a reality for people.
So what's the theory now about why it persists?
This is the problem, Pat. It's still a bit of a mystery. There's 200 separate symptoms. That's one issue. And different people might have different sets. The common symptom is fatigue and brain fog.
Does it come and go?
It does seem to come and go, yeah. Now, remember that, and then there's three groups within that. Some it resolves after a while, right? Some takes a bit long, after a month or two. Some take about a year, but some have it for years, it seems. And we don't know why that is. And that's one of the challenges. It's so heterogeneous, as we say, between people.
You're wondering if it might be a bit like malaria or brucellosis. Once you have it, that it might come back.
It could be that, yeah. And that's one theory, by the way. The virus is hiding in your body and re-erupts occasionally is one idea. The second thing to mention, Pat, is it's very relevant beyond COVID because you've got chronic fatigue, post-viral, and Lyme disease, for example. Many people have persistent symptomology. So the hope, of course, is studying long COVID will help these other situations as well. You
know? And there are major studies underway, but they're not really deep science, are they? They're more statistical, I suppose.
It's a mix. I mean, the good news, Pat, is there's a massive study in the UK at the moment, which is well worth mentioning. It's a huge trial. It's called Stimulate ICP, 4,500 patients. They're testing three drug combinations in those people. And secondly, as you say, it's sort of clinical care. Are they treating people in the optimum way? So it goes beyond just trials. So the bottom line there is there's still lots of effort going into it.
The drugs in question, there's antihistamines being tested, an anti-clotting agent, and colchicine, which is an anti-inflammatory used for gout.
Yeah, they speak to our theories as to what's going wrong. So there's evidence it might be a clotting disorder. Little micro clots are forming in your brain and in your tissues, and there's been some evidence for this. So, of course, a trial that stops clotting might work. Histamines come up strangely, Pat. A subset of people seem to overreact to their own histamine. Now, as you may know, when you have hay fever, you make histamine and it causes all the symptoms. There's some evidence of the histamine system being dysfunctional and that's being tested. And then the anti-inflammatory. Yes, so colchicine is a very potent anti-inflammatory medicine and that would suppress some of the symptoms. So those trials are running in those patients.
Now, our second topic is the inverse brain drain that may happen now on foot of Trump.
Yeah, now I'm involved in the European Research Council in Brussels and I was over there a couple of weeks ago. And of course, America's crisis could be Europe's opportunity because what Trump is doing to science in America is disgraceful. There's going to be massive marches. They've fired 10% of their scientists in the NIH and the NSF, for instance. They're not renewing contracts. Everything's frozen over there. Now, it might change, of course, but if you're a scientist in America, you're going to go, why would I stay here? That's the idea. And the EU has begun a Choose Europe campaign, which is a great phrase, isn't it?
Yeah.
To try and attract heavy hitters from America back to Europe. And it's inverse because after the Second World War, many European scientists went to America. In fact, their whole atom bomb program was built on European scientists, for instance. You know? So now can we bring scientists to Europe and bring the brightest and best? Now, it's not trivial because to move these people is expensive. The investment will be huge. But still, the European Union has decided to go after this and try to exploit, I guess, the situation in the US and science.
And there'll be professorships based in Brussels, but you could live anywhere.
Yeah, that's one proposal. They'll be appointed by the European Commission, which simplifies it. And then they'll be seconded into universities, which seems to me to be a very wise thing.
So we could apply.
Any country in the EU can apply for it. And it hasn't started yet, by the way. They're still discussing it. There's a lot of discussions happening around this. The second thing is the European Union is issuing statements to support US science. To say, look, because US is very important for science, you know, so if you cut back on science in America, there's a global impact of that as well.
Now, we've seen Trump do mini U-turns and delays and procrastinations on various of his executive orders. And it's interesting, RFK had manners put on him by the Texas measles outbreak where there's been at least one fatality.
He did, and it's a good thing, Pat, in a way, because what he said is go to your... He hasn't said take the vaccine, mind you, but go to your doctor. he's saying, and effectively he's saying the measles vaccine should be taken, because remember, Pat, children die of measles. And in Texas, there has been a death, and very severe. So some kids, very severe measles. So, and they weren't vaccinated. So
yeah, why did he do it? Was it an awakening to real science or something else?
I don't know. It could be a good sign. He's listening to the experts. Every expert says the measles vaccine is really important, you know, and now he's
Is he listening to the lawyers?
Well, that's the next question. Yes, I don't know. You see, in the past, he has spoken out against that vaccine. If he did that in America now, and some parent of some very sick child, you know, you never know, there could be litigation, couldn't there, because they were following his advice. So maybe that's one reason for this.
Now, the next story is why women live longer than men.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of other things that are about women's hearts and brains and so on.
Yeah. Well, as we were saying, Pat, just now, this week, the big journal is Nature that we all look at. That's where the big breakthroughs are reported. And this morning, remarkably, there's three big studies have come out. And if you're an immunologist like me, it's a busy time. So this study has shown that women have two X chromosomes, as you may know. We've got an X and a Y. One of them is inactivated, actually, in women, and only one does its job, right? Now, what they've shown is as women age, the other one reawakens, right? And what it's making seems to slow down aging, and even more excitingly, seems to slow down cognitive decline. Now, we know women are less likely to get Alzheimer's than men, and the big question is why. It could be their second X chromosome suddenly wakes up and now begins to stimulate the brain. And in fact, the genes on that chromosome seem to be tied into memory and learning in the brain.
There's a suggestion that more women get Alzheimer's, but only because they live longer.
But that's true, actually. I know if you age normalize it, overall the women are getting slightly more as a group, but overall they're less inclined to get it younger, let's put it that way, than men, you know, and maybe this is part of it. But secondly, the living longer thing, that could be tied into this X chromosome reawakening as women get older. So it's seen as a real interesting finding.
Another report, women are more likely to survive famines and natural disasters and pandemics and diseases. Women's immune systems respond more quickly to viruses.
They do indeed. Yeah, and in fact, there's evidence for this. And in COVID, women were less likely to get COVID and get severe disease than men.
So is this the survival of the fittest, that you need women to live long, to nurture and to breed?
Exactly. We men are dispensable, Pat. Did you not know that? You know? Whereas the woman is carrying the baby, you know. So it's very important that they get protected. The trouble with that is they get more autoimmune disease because the immune system is slightly more active. And as they get older, these autoimmune diseases kick in.
So speaking of immune systems and so on, there's been a discovery. I don't know how big a breakthrough it is, but there's some hidden part of the immune activity which has been now announced.
That was the headlines again this morning. Another paper in Nature, they're saying they've claimed to find a new part of the immune system. Now, I think that's slightly overstating it. But what they found is your own immune system can generate natural antibiotics. Ah. Now, as you know, antibiotics are a great breakthrough with Alexander Fleming and penicillin. Now, what this study has shown is a part of your immune system called the proteasome, I know it's a technical term, is spitting out natural peptides, little proteins that are antibiotics that can kill bacteria. And these have never seen, I mean, the beauty of this is that this has never been seen before. It was a group that looked at the body and tried to figure out if there were any natural bacterial killing factors. And now they found them, and they're saying this is a new thing because obviously we haven't seen it before.
Is the idea that you check these out, what is being spat out, you check it and then you synthesize it and have a new family of antibiotics?
You've got it 100%. And a big concern we have is antibiotic resistance. Now we know MRSA is a good example. These bugs are very clever. They're dodging the antibiotics we have. So there's a big need for new ones. And now this group is claiming they found some new ones that are natural, that your own body can make. Now, there's two options there. One is get the body to make more naturally. If we could do that, that'd be useful. Or you're exactly right, take one of them and turn that into a drug effectively. Now, that's a tricky thing to do because there are things called peptides, which are hard to work on. But still, that's a logical next step with this.
Now, the other story is what's called a eureka moment for scientists who found that aspirin may prevent cancers from spreading. Yep. Now, you're familiar with this.
Very much so. Yeah, well, there's been evidence for a long time aspirin might protect against certain tumours, low-dose aspirin. Now, again, we've got to put a caveat on this. Aspirin can be dangerous. It can cause stomach bleeding and so on. So it was never fully adapted. But there was a hint that aspirin could have an anti-tumour effect. And now this big paper from Cambridge, authors are in Cambridge, shows the mechanism for this. And what they're able to show is that aspirin wakes up, again, it's like waking up, a type of cell called a T cell that can kill a tumour. So they've connected this now into a very important part of the immune system that can attack tumours. And that's the first time that's been shown. So we know, for instance, that a great way to kill tumours in your own body are these things called T cells. Aspirin seems to wake them up, as it were, through a quite a complex pathway.
It turns out aspirin is quite the miracle drug, really.
But it has been. Yeah, it has, because it protects against heart attacks and all kinds of things. You know? Yeah. And in fact, part of my PhD was an aspirin pad all those years ago. So it's always been a fascinating drug, you know.
Now, I want to mention something I didn't think I was going to mention to you, but it just occurred to me when you were talking about the new family, potentially, of antibiotics. Mm. We talked very early on in our series about, are they pronounced phages?
Phages, yeah, absolutely.
P-H-A-G-E-S.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Now, are they a burgeoning area?
Well, that, you know, I hate to mention the Russians, Pat, but Russian scientists were advocating for phages for a long time. These are little viruses that kill bacteria. So the question was, could you use those now to kill any bacteria?
Yeah.
And the Russian scientists, beginning even in the 70s, were exploring this as a possible way to kill bacteria.
So if you get antibiotic resistance to existing ones,
yeah,
there's a different way.
There's a different way. Yeah. This is using viruses to our advantage, you might say. Phages actually infect bacteria, you see. That's their host.
Yeah.
COVID infects us, phages infect bacteria. So could you use those now as a way to kill bacteria? And again, that's been reawakened, actually, in the last 3 or 4 years, I've noticed. There's a big interest. It's being driven by this antibiotic resistance fear, because that's a big fear, remember, if antibiotics stop working, yeah, there's no more surgery and all kinds of things.
Well, all we can say, Luke, after today's series of developments, science never sleeps.
Never, certainly this week, Pat is wide awake.
Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin, thank you very much. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.